Hello, beautiful ladies. Dr. Emily Kybert here with another episode of Thyroid Strong Podcast. Today we have on a very special guest. It is Mary. She went through Thyroid Strong and she shares her experience of losing weight through the program. And I can't wait for you to listen to this episode. And if you're listening to this episode on May 22nd, we are having a sale of Thyroid Strong. It's $200 off, 40% off. Normally the program is $497. And it is $297 right now. I never offer the program this low. So if you're like, how do I work out with Hashimoto's without burning out? This program is for you. Deal ends tonight. You can go to dremilykybert.com/TS Summer. We're calling it the 6-week summer slim down. And then the program doors close. Can't get access. So if you want access, this is your chance. This is the time. All right, ladies, let's jump in to the episode.
I have to tell you, I really like your program. I've had Hashimoto's I had probably had it for a long time before it was finally diagnosed, and I was pretty sick, and I had half my thyroid taken out, and I tried to follow all the protocol, and just real quickly, the history, I got on an AIP diet. I lost about 10 pounds. I've never been overweight. I've always been more on the thin side.
Yeah.
But I could never shed that last 10 pounds of baby weight. Now, 28 years ago, that's turned into 15. And I'm not used to carrying anything extra. But long story short, I had half my thyroid taken out. My endocrinologist put me on Cytomel and Synthroid. And that seemed to work really well. And that's when I lost the 10 pounds, and I was following the AIP protocol pretty well, and I had gotten involved in yoga.
Amazing.
But I had to then change endocrinologist, and he took me off the Cytomel. He said, yeah, people love it, but AFib runs in my family. And he said, Cytomel can affect your heart. Synthroid can if it's not the correct dosage. I don't know if you have any opinions about that. I would like some other opinions because I always felt a little better on it. But long story short, what?
I mean, Cytomel is the active form, right? T3.
Yeah.
So that's what gives you energy and makes you feel good. I think it depends on the doctor in terms of, because I think a lot of endocrinologists believe like T3 will lead to osteoporosis, osteopenia,
yes,
as well as,
yep,
you know, especially with any family history.
Yeah.
But I would definitely get a second opinion.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because during my labs, he does take free T3 and T4. My T3 is always running very low.
Mm-hmm.
And the first endocrinologist told me that she thinks I have trouble converting.
Yeah.
The T4 to the T3.
Yeah.
And I just don't. I know he's more concerned about the heart and the bone, but I'll say, moving forward, I try to really maintain a gluten-free diet, and I've tried every diet to lose 10 pounds. Can't do it.
Mm.
I get discouraged on the gluten-free diet because I do have a husband that loves carbs and bread and all that, and I'll do really well for a while, and then I'm off the wagon, you know?
Yeah.
But
can I ask you a question about the conversion?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if free T3 is always low, it sounds like potentially you're not converting. Did the endocrinologist make any recommendations in terms of trying to improve that conversion?
Mm-mm. He never even really addresses it much.
Yeah. So typically when there's a conversion issue, there could be like some low grade inflammation in your gut. Mm-hmm. About 60% of our T4 to T3 gets converted in the gut. So sometimes functional medicine doctors will look at how is your gut health? Do you have inflammation in your gut lining? And they would do that through a stool test. Conventional medicine wouldn't recognize it as like a valid test, but almost mm-hmm. functional medicine doc I know will use a stool test to look at there's markers on there that see, okay, is your calprotectin elevated? That's a sign that there's inflammation in your gut lining. Is there any sort of underlying bacterial overgrowth or parasitic overgrowth? Because those things will then not allow good conversion of T4 to T3. So examples of that would be like a GI map. This is like a stool test. You do it at home. You send it in. So a lot of functional medicine docs will use that. The other place where there's turnover of your thyroid, probably 20%, is your liver. So you can check, like, is there any sort of, I mean, you can check on a blood draw your liver enzymes. I'm going to guess those will probably look good, but you could see that would be the other place to look. So in functional medicine, those are the two places where if they see that T3 isn't getting converted, you could work on your gut health to improve conversion. So
that's a good point. And the other thing is I've developed a lot of food sensitivities. In your experience, is a lot of that related to thyroid issues and Hashimoto's? Because I even have problems with taking aspirins or NSAIDs, is however you pronounce it, and Tylenol. I can take those at a certain level, but I get a certain tolerance and then I react. And the reactions are always in my mouth, swollen lip, swollen tongue, or along my jawline.
Interesting.
And I get that with food too. And I've done food sensitivity. I did blood work through a nutritionist and I was allergic to so many things. Then I went to an allergist and I have seasonal allergies, but nothing much came up with food. Oh. So it's just confusing.
Yeah.
And then we'll get to the exercise.
So an allergist is going to look at like IgE reaction, mm-hmm. kind of like anaphylactic reaction. I'm assuming you're the person who ran the food allergy test is looking at an IgG, IgA, which is like a delayed reaction. If you are having food reactions that aren't like from your childhood and like anaphylactic, that's usually a sign that something's off in your gut. So what could it be? It could be a multitude of things. So it could be H. pylori is bacterial overgrowth. SIBO is a bacterial overgrowth. Like there's different causes, food sensitivities. I used to have a lot of food sensitivities as well. And I did an elimination diet and I was like, why aren't my food sensitivities gone? But I think the AIP is like the first step to just decrease the load. And then the second mm-hmm. step is to get a clear picture of what's going on in there. Hence, like that stool test, like a GI map, because then it can start to pick up those things that I mentioned, bacterial overgrowth. Is there inflammation in the gut? And then you could work on that piece. It might be like, let's say you have H. pylori. Let's just hypotheticals, because that one causes food sensitivities. You could treat that for 2 months, take some supplements to heal your gut, like L-glutamine and aloe, and then reintroduce those foods and see if you have any reaction. So that's what I did. And now I can eat a broader range of stuff. Like I still don't eat gluten, but all the things that I couldn't eat way back in the day, I was like, it was very narrow, is now broader. I think the other thing is there are other things that can create that. It sounds like you're getting a histamine reaction, right? Yeah. And so part of Hashimoto's is, if you think about our gut lining, the junctions in our gut lining are tight. But if we have stress or have taken a round of antibiotics or take a lot of NSAIDs, or there's environmental factors, then the junctions will become loose and then things will pass through.
Yeah.
So like larger chunks of food, viruses, bacteria, and then our body reacts to those. When we're getting like that histamine intolerance, it could be a sign of like leaky gut. Again, it's figure out what the offender is. Mm-hmm. Great way to do that is that GI map. There's other different stool tests. They're all kind of in more of the functional realm. Like if you went to your doctor, they would be like, we don't. And then you could identify what's going on and then address it and then do like a gut healing protocol so that the junctions become, they're not like letting chunks of food and viruses pass through tighter and they're healing those things. So I also, every time I ate, my tongue would swell and like it would get itchy, like a histamine reaction. And I was like, is it what I'm eating? Because it seems like I can't eat anything. I mean, part of it was removing gluten. Part of it was addressing some of those bacterial overgrowths. And for me, one of them was mold. Mold can cause like a histamine reaction.
I've always had, in fact, dust mites is a big allergen of mine. And mold always was when I was younger. We would go to this area that was down in the valley where there was a lot of must and mold in the house. And I would always get reactions.
Yeah. So mold loves dust. That's why, like, if you live in like a little bit of water damage, they always say, like, just keep everything really clean because mold gravitates towards dust and then you inhale it. I would ask, seasonal allergies are also related to gut health.
Yeah.
So I have some terrible seasonal allergies. Yeah. Worked on my gut. Like, I don't get seasonal allergies anymore. And then the other thing I would think is, like, you know, you're sensitive to mold, especially childhood. Is there any mold potential in the house or water damage that could be like an underlying environmental factor that's just creating more load on your system?
Those are really good points, because the one thing you mentioned that has created a lot of frustration in me is I oftentimes, for the food sensitivities, I can eat something one day and it's fine, and the next day it's not.
Totally.
And so these are good avenues to start working on. All this I started to notice looking back, having the information I have currently. The first time I had a reaction was after I had a hysterectomy and my ovaries removed after a surgery. And that was 18, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've had trouble ever since. And that could have probably triggered all the Hashimoto's too at that point, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Some people have a reaction to whatever medication the anesthesia is.
Like, I had a reaction to that recently.
And then obviously with a hysterectomy, like, hormones will change. Yeah, I would like a really easy avenue is just to look at how your gut is functioning and to see if there's any underlying bacterial overgrowth or infections. And sometimes people assume infections are like, oh, I'm like doubled over in pain. Like, infections in the gut can be a histamine reaction or brain fog. It's not always stomach issues.
Right.
So I would like, if it was me, I would start to walk that path of, okay, could I explore that? What state are you in?
I'm in Texas.
Ooh.
You're okay. In Colorado, right?
I'm in Colorado. I have a friend. She is a DO. She's a great functional medicine doc. She's amazing with medication, who sees patients in Colorado, Texas, and Michigan. She does telehealth to Texas. But it might just be interesting getting a second opinion. So she's based in Colorado, but she does telehealth to Michigan and Texas as well. And she not only is amazing at dosing, like, she would be able to answer that Cytomel question.
Yeah.
Often we'll do like a combination of some T3, T4, but also start to address, it sounds like, this histamine intolerance and look at gut health.
That really helps narrow it down, and it gives me kind of a newfound energy to explore this again, because I was really good for a while when all this was new to me. And then you gradually get away from it because you start feeling better. Like, even certain wines I'll drink.
So wines are very, they're high. So there's a certain group of foods that are like high histamine. Spinach, avocado, banana.
That's what I eat all the time.
Yeah, me too. I used to make like blueberry smoothies with spinach. And then I was like, why does my mouth feel funny? Oranges, like things that have a peel, bananas. And so I would eat anything that's been left out and exposed to air longer. So like a dry aged steak. So it sounds like you've done a lot of eliminating of certain foods. It might be interesting to see how you feel, not just eliminate every food, but have a 4-week period of removing high histamine foods. But then the step is always heal the gut, versus just like eliminating a ton of foods for the next decade.
But it's interesting you mentioned that, because sometimes I can eat foods like salads and stuff like that, and I almost feel like my stomach hurts from a lot of those things. I'll have to check that avenue. I never check that avenue about histamines. And I have a brother now that's had some reactions, and he's never had a problem before. So I can always help him.
I find that women with Hashimoto's do better on cooked vegetables versus salads. Yeah. Salads, yeah. I look like I'm pregnant again when I eat a salad. It's just harder to digest.
Yeah. So, yes.
It, you know, the downside of always eating cooked vegetables is everything's kind of mushy, but yeah. I find women do better with cooked vegetables versus salads. Even though salads are easier, they're harder to digest and can cause bloating.
I almost feel better when I have cooked vegetables. So that gives me some things to narrow it down. And getting to the physical aspect of your program, I've been very active. And I'm 64 years old. There's nothing to working 6 hours really hard in the yard. I have an acre.
Love
putting mulch down, gardening, weeding, trimming, pruning, and then playing pickleball, walking, yoga. I don't do it all one day, but over a week's time frame. But as I've kind of gone on, I can have some really terrible pain the next day. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, is it my age? Now, I recently finished breast cancer treatment and I finished radiation. And I was trying to maintain my level of activity during radiation because I felt fine. I had two surgeries in March and April. I recovered from them really well. In fact, I felt so good after them. I was wondering, maybe that anesthesia has stayed in my body long and killed the joint and muscle pain. I don't know. But a couple weeks ago, before I completed my radiation, it was like, man, I think I had a really bad flare where I felt every joint in my body, every muscle. And it was like a 9 out of 10. And I said to my radiation therapist doctor, she goes, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. Getting radiation on a daily basis is like running a marathon. And that's not what I had read. But I quit everything because you had suggested too. That's about the same time I've been looking at your program. And I quit everything because I didn't know what was causing what. But I will say your program is a lot more motivating to me and it does make me feel better. And it's given me food for thought because I really think I can't lift a lot of heavy weights. I'm still doing 10 pound dumbbells. And I think I'm a day later on your workout program. Like I did Monday's workout today. So I think I'm more on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday schedule just because of my retired life and my husband and stuff.
Yeah.
So I love the workout, but it makes me think when I'm listening to your alignment and your cues that really I have not been effectively using my body to work in the yard and stuff. I think I use my joints to do a lot of lifting or maintain a lot of the oomph. And maybe that's why I get sore. It could be a combination. So I'll let you kind of comment on that.
Yeah. So full body joint pain, like every joint in the body.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably sounds more like a flare, like a hashi flare. Person ran in 6 hours in the garden and you're like up and down knees. Full body joint pain sounds more like a little bit of a flare up versus
an ache here or there in your own brain pickleball or from hitting it wrong.
Yeah.
But it was like from my toes to my fingers all over.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, I had had some flares like that before, but I never had a full understanding of is my body in a flare or is it something else? Because I also have gotten away from taking Tylenol and anti-inflammatories because of the reaction. So anyway, I stopped doing that. And after about 3 days, boom, it all went away.
I mean, those things fill your soul, right? So
want
to get you back to, could it be, and have you noticed more of this like full body joint pain post radiation, right? Like during radiation, you felt good.
And I've only been post radiation a couple days. And they said it could last an additional 2 weeks. But I really quit the yard, quit pickleball, And I've only done your program. And like I say, I only use 10-pound weight.
Oh, that's okay.
I felt much better.
Good.
So I'm just going to stay with that because I'm listening to my body, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is like the goal would be to get back to those things. Could it be gardening an hour versus 6 hours? Like, think of it as like you're training as an athlete and you don't just run a half marathon. You're kind of slowly progressing. I think the good thing is I've always found that when people work on the strength piece, when they do go back to something that's like a pickleball or gardening, that everything's stronger and more stable. So that thing that they love to do feels easier.
Yeah.
Versus causing joint pain. And I know it's like, I mean, my parents are big gardeners and it's like the season to garden.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially in Texas, you've only got about 8 weeks to get it done because otherwise it's too hot and I don't do good in the heat.
Yeah, of course. So is it within that 8 week period right now?
Can I just work like a wild banshee? No, it's pretty much over because by Memorial Day weekend, I'm done with my spring gardening.
Okay. Yes. So I would focus on getting strong.
That's what I'm.
And then slowly, maybe it's pickleball for half an hour versus I know people play pickleball for hours. And I know that's hard at first, but to kind of create that slow progression so that your joints don't feel pain from toes to fingers. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. One of my goals, and we had to do a cold goal sheet. As I age, I want to be able to continue moving because that's what makes me happy. Oh my gosh, I can't stand sitting around.
That's great. I love that. So, that's not the average retired person.
No. So anyway, like I said, I love your program. It took me a while to get on board maneuvering the website. And as you can probably tell by a few of my questions, but I think I've got it set up. I was going to ask you about the goblet squat.
Yeah.
That's the one where you've got one leg forward and the other one bent and you go down on the
knee. Like a kickstand deadlift.
One thing, I do have a bone spur in one of my feet and I have trouble bending my toes.
On the back foot.
And then I have trouble getting all the way down on my knee, which is obviously muscle improvement I need. Is it better to try to use a weight to go down as far as I can? Or is it better to skip the weight and try to get down on my knee and up? And when I have the ability to complete that, add the weight.
Okay, so we're talking about a lunge, it sounds like, where one foot's forward, one foot's back.
Yeah.
The foot is like the heels popped up. Right. You're trying to tap your back knee down. So you could totally modify. So you could tap your back knee to a block, like a yoga block. You're not going back down until you start to build that quad strength. The other thing you could do, it's more challenging, but it's a modification for the toe, is to put your back foot on something. So here, because I know if you have any sort of like bunion or bone spur,
I've got a bone spur in that toe joint, that large toe joint. And sometimes it bothers me and sometimes it doesn't, but it's hard to bend. Like with the warm up too.
Oh, with hands and knees?
That's also true of the warm up.
So you could untuck your toe for the warm up. Like if you're on hands and knees and you're rocking, you can keep your toe straight.
Right.
You're talking about like this move, right? Where you're like here.
And you've got the weight also. Is that called a goblet
it's
squat?
A lunge. No. Like a split squat or a lunge?
Yeah, that's a split squat.
Yeah. To get around the toe, it's a little bit harder, but you could put your foot on something.
Oh.
And go as far down, but you could go here. That'll work this and this more. But you don't have to touch your knee to the ground. So that'll be a modification.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea. All right.
And it kind of gets you around the toe. Because I know there's like planks where your toes are tucked under, like a beast plank.
Yes.
So instead of doing
it. Sometimes I'd put my knees down.
Yeah.
My knees and
also do it from here. Right.
Okay. Yep.
Versus like on the floor where your toes are tucked under more. There's plus pressure on the toes, but you're still working core and shoulders. So you could do it off an elevated surface. That's a good modification.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the plan, now I'm signed up for the intermediate, but I'm probably not intermediate when it comes to the weights.
That's okay.
But I mean, it's working good and I'm looking forward to progressing and continuing, but I don't have any other questions or things. You've answered a lot and given me a lot of food for thought, so to speak, in terms of where to go from here.
Sometimes people with joint pain feel, I don't know if you're taking any like supplements for joint pain or anything, but sometimes they feel good on curcumin.
I had been taking that and it really did work and I need to get back on it. Is that something that you have to build up to? Or let's say I'm having joint pain, more joint pain than normal. If I take a couple capsules, will they work like NSAIDs?
It's not like NSAIDs. You kind of have to like build it up in the system over time.
What about fish oil? Do you think that's beneficial?
Yeah, I think it's great for heart health as well as just decreasing overall inflammation. I think fish oil is one of those supplements, like you want to get a high quality fish oil versus like all vitamin D is the same.
Right.
$20 or $100 on it. Fish oil is actually, you want to invest in a good fish oil and you want to keep it in the fridge so it doesn't like degrade. I like Designs for Health, Omega Hypo. And then if I get any sort of like joint pain, I take something called CurcuMax. So it has curcumin in it.
Okay.
Yeah. I also use it if people get any sort of like whiplash or head trauma kind of stuff, just for overall decreasing of inflammation. But the dose for fish oil is that is proven to be like anti-inflammatory is 3 grams per day, which is a lot because, you know, fish oil capsules are like,
they're huge.
I feel like horse pills. And I usually do 1 gram at like breakfast, then lunch, then dinner, because 3 grams is the effective dose.
Don't they usually come in milligram dosages though, or what?
They usually come in 800 milligrams, like around there.
But
I usually take 2, so I'm usually dosing more.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, you really don't know how much is getting absorbed, especially if there's any sort of leaky gut symptoms. But yeah, they usually come in milligrams. Mine comes in 800 milligrams. So I just take breakfast, lunch. Sometimes I take 1 for dinner versus
3 grams per day. And of course, I've got high cholesterol.
Yeah.
And high cholesterol goes hand in hand with Hashimoto's, doesn't it?
It does, as well as when we go through menopause, our cholesterol. Yeah.
And 10 years ago, probably when my Hashimoto's started, that never got diagnosed right away. Probably was more than 10 years because the surgery's been almost that long ago. I was just reading an article that you need that if you get your hypothyroidism balanced, that your cholesterol should come down or be under control. But most doctors prescribe statins.
Which, yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would go back to this idea that there's like conventional range of normal versus optimal and trying to get closer to optimal, if possible, can start to like move those dial movers in terms of other things related. So like, when was the last time you had your thyroid labs done?
I just recently had them done because I'm going to see my endocrinologist tomorrow. And my TSH went up 1.5, which I think is a lot in 3 months because I have mine done every 3 months. So it went from 2 point something to 3.5. So he only does the T4.
Okay.
Which was 1.76 and now it's 1.40. He says, I think that's primarily the only thing he looks at, he says. The TSH went from 2.8 to 3.5. And my free T3 went from 2.6 to 2.3. So the TSH went up, my T3 went down, and my T4 went down.
What was your T4 again?
1.4.
1.4.
And the TSH is 3.5, and then the free T3 is 2.3.
So let's see, total T4. I'll show you this. So this is what I use and what my functional medicine doctor uses. So this column is a range that a functional medicine doctor would use, like optimal, right?
0.4 to 2.0.
And this column is conventional range. So, you know, technically you're still within conventional range.
And that's what my conventional range looks like on this.
Right.
Yeah.
If you look, so you said he did free T3, which is this one. So this is optimal.
3.25.
And then the next.
Well, it's really low. It's not even on the chart. Yeah.
But it's within conventional range. So we're going, you're active, you want to optimize. You're not like the retiree that's getting 2,000 steps a day.
Right.
You want to be active and you want to thrive. Total T4 is right here. You're saying it wasn't...
He just does the free T4.
Oh, free T4. Okay. So free T4 is here. So conventional is 1 to 1.5, which you're within range. And then you can see... Sorry, that's optimal and then that's conventional.
So it's high. Yeah, it's a little on the higher end for...
Yeah, but still within range. And then you got to take into account... In an ideal world, you would get TSH, free T3... Total T3, free T4, total T4. You've got T3 uptake, reverse. A lot of doctors don't do reverse T3.
But isn't that, I thought I just read that gives what your body has to use.
So sometimes functional medicine docs will take reverse T3 and look at the ratio of reverse T3 to, I think it's free T3, and it shows... It's an indicator of like how your mitochondrial health is. So if someone's feeling really tired, looking at that ratio and then optimizing off of that. And then the two antibody tests, these are two different labs, but TPO antibodies and then TGAB.
And I've asked both my doctors, my first one when I had her and this one, why they don't do the antibody test. And they told me because it changes on a daily basis.
And it can change on a daily basis, but that's why you take a baseline over time. So if you see over time that it started at 400 and it's like, you're going in the right direction versus let's say it's going down and then you get radiation and it jumps up, like, you know, like now you have this trend to follow. Sure.
Yeah.
To then be like, okay, like your body, and it's not necessarily like, more antibodies means worse symptoms, but you just want to look at over time, know, okay, is my body reacting to something more? If it is, where could I look to decrease the inflammatory load? Maybe it's looking at gut health. Maybe it's diving deeper into history of mold. Maybe it's taking a good history. What are some environmental factors around you? What are maybe some gut symptoms? So that would be the ideal next step is you get the data. And since you're getting blood work every 3 months, you're tracking it over time and then making clinical decisions on her conversion is still not good. How can we
optimize it?
Do that and optimize it? Maybe it's looking at gut health or liver health. And the endocrinologist isn't really going to do it. Because I've seen I think it because a functional medicine doctor is an investment, testing and supplements and doing protocols and sticking to them. And it sounds like you would be a very compliant person. It's an investment to consider.
And here, I've got one more loaded. This is a loaded question for you.
Sure.
Is there any connection between patients with thyroid problems and usage of Synthroid and those things that help them and breast cancer?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
I know it's a loaded question, but I've seen things on the internet. And of course, Dr. Weston Childs, you're familiar with him. I just want to follow you because the other thing too is I'm all over the place with things, but he presented a study that was done, but it was retrospective. It was looking back and trying to attribute potential breast cancer with 600,000 patients. They took data from Taiwan. And they looked at the patients and they looked at these patients had thyroid problems. They were on levothyroxine. But then he broke it all down and said, but you can't really make that analogy because, you know, you don't know if what there's too many variables within each of those patients you don't have.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why he even put that up there. That just sparked my curiosity. And then I got on the internet, which is terrible because I don't have the medical background to filter all this stuff.
I haven't heard of that connection. When I think about increasing thyroid hormones, I mean, every cell in the body needs thyroid hormone to function.
Yeah, right? You need it.
You need it. I can't think of it being creating like cellular proliferation to then lead to breast cancer. So I'm not familiar.
Well, this has been all really helpful. It kind of gives me an incentive and motivation to reset because I was really sick before I was diagnosed. I probably went to so many specialists, like for 10 years, and an ENT finally diagnosed me, and my thyroid antibodies were in the thousands.
How crazy an ENT diagnosed you.
I kept thinking, my head hurt. I had headaches. I kept thinking, my sinus problems. And he'd look and he'd go, I don't see anything. I always had a runny nose. And he was a good guy. He was the one. He was my hero. And it's just sad because he died. He passed away of a brain tumor. And he was so young. But he found it. And wow. And I think I'm a textbook to it because after my third baby, I started having a lot of female problems. And why my OBGYN didn't check my thyroid, I don't get it, because I'm sure that would have come up right off the bat.
Yeah. Or maybe
a lot of
just TSH. I don't know. Maybe
conventional
range. Technically, you're still within conventional range, right?
Right.
And with this jump. But I think when I was diagnosed, I think my TSH was like 3.2. And I was like, I feel like death. I don't care if I'm in range.
No, I think mine was in range. Mine was in range, too. It was at 2-something.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, in an ideal world, your TSH is like as close to 1 as possible.
And that's what my endocrinologist did say.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see if you did work on some gut stuff, if like the conversion would be better. Because you can literally do a protocol for 2 months. 3 months, retest, and like your thyroid labs can change. It'd be interesting, like if you went that route to see if your conversion was better, your cholesterol came down.
But it's interesting. I had the food, and I don't know if this affects everybody based on some of the diets I've been on and the information I've received is foods can be addictive. And salt, man, I'll take salt over chocolate any day. But if I go for a couple weeks without that stuff, I don't crave it. Mm. So I have to get past that.
Yeah.
And so the elimination's been hard just because maybe I just haven't had the motivation. Right.
I think the idea with an elimination is like you do it for 6 weeks. You do a reintroduction phase to see what you're reacting to. And then based on that data, you do cut out certain things. But then that's like step one. Step two is, let's look at your gut health, heal the gut, and then return to reintroducing things.
Yeah.
See if from healing the gut, if you now can, because the goal is not to eat unlimited things for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But then if you eat something like technically you're not supposed to eat, then you feel worse. The goal is to identify, heal the gut, retest.
Right.
So I think it's like you're in that second stage that you need to figure out, okay, what's going on in there that could also contribute to a conversion issue that could contribute to it. It sounds like you have a lifetime and probably a genetic component of like histamine or like runny nose, sinus issues, head pressure, mold sensitivity, now reactions to NSAIDs. It sounds like there's this kind of lifelong history that's presenting in different forms. That all comes back to the gut. Unfortunately, we think like sinus issues here, but it's really up in our sinuses, but it's really a gut issue. I know it's like conventional medicine doesn't talk about that. It's just not like they view the body, but.
Yeah. When I was growing up, I was like the only kid in my family that had seasonal allergies and I had eczema. And then when I went, and then I went away to college and that's when I started having the gut problems.
So things like will manifest differently, but the root is the same. So it's like seasonal allergies, then it's like gut and then skin issues, like things that present on the skin usually are coming from something.
Then
it turned into gut issues and then maybe it's hormone issues and then it's loaded. But sometimes it's still the same root cause. So it sounds like you've done the first step of elimination, but now we need to see, okay, what's going on in there?
Well, you know, the thing is women that are menopausal, I think, isn't it natural we should allow our bodies just to be? Another word, you know, do you believe in hormone supplements? I mean, a lot of people do to balance things, but is that really the nature of our bodies when you're 64 or 74 or 84?
Yeah, I think it depends on your symptoms. If your symptoms are totally debilitating, then and it takes the edge off. If you can't function due to your symptoms, then I would say use hormone replacement therapy. You're okay. And maybe it's not forever, right?
Right.
For a season of life.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. I think it depends on your symptoms. And part of that is like genetics. So everyone's going to be different.
Thanks so much, Emily.
Thank you for having me.
All right, ladies, one more time. If you're like, I need what she just did, jump into Thyroid Strong, $200 off, 40% off until tonight. Go to Dr. Emily Kiberd, kiberd.com/TSSummer. All right, ladies, I'll see you in there. Giddy up. Let's go.